internet, welcome to episode 109 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me as always is my lovely hostess, Aaron Paulette. How are you doing, Aaron?
I am a sourpuss grumpy face today.
Well, that's a thing.
I'm just done. And if you are a friend of mine, if you follow me, you probably have an idea what's going on. If you don't, I'm not going to air dirty laundry. I'm just going to say, last week really got on my nerves, and I got very close to metaphorically tossing the gasoline and then dropping a lit torch. Just, it got bad. And fortunately, things are getting better. Had a nice weekend, and so, you know, God willing, this will be a much calmer, much better week. Still haven't gotten my closet repaired, by the way, because the neighbor who said he was going to help flaked out, and we've had a heck of a time getting the repair people out because, you know, to COVIDs, and so we've now got someone finally coming out tomorrow, and the time is, and I quote, either late morning or early afternoon, end quote.
Ugh.
I have no idea. Who do these people think they are? The cable company?
Yeah.
Crying out loud. It's like, I don't even know what late morning means. Is that 10? Is that 11? I don't know. And so I'm, here's what's going to happen, because I know what's going to happen, because things are screwed up. They're going to come in. They're going to look at the gaping holes in the sheetrock or drywall or whatever it's called where the brackets tore out, and they're going to go, oh yeah, we can't fix this right now because first we've got to patch these holes and then we're going to have to get new brackets and fixtures. So they'll have to come and inconvenience me twice, maybe even three times. They might just do measurements this time and then come back with the repair work. And then once the thing is repaired, then they would mount the shelf. It's one of those wire things that's really annoying, that it's mainly a shelf, but it's got the little bar on the bottom that's kind of like a clothes rack, but not really, because you can only slide it about a foot before it bumps into one of those little pillars, and it's a real pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what's going on with me.
Well,
but you, Weird, you are a perpetual happy smiling Muppet. So why don't you tell me what's going on that's good and happy in your life, and you can cheer me up.
Well, my daughter is currently up in Maine, and so my parents took her again for another few days since the Independence Day was canceled. Some people did some stuff, but it was one of those, like, you know, our town usually has some things going on, and we usually have a bunch of people over at the house, and we just decided, you know what? Well, definitely not going to do that. And our friends contacted us and said, hey, you guys want to do something? And I said to my wife, they said they asked if I want to do something. She was like, nah. So I just cooked. I cleaned since the house is empty. And it just generally relaxed. I got like all caught up on the podcast stuff. This morning I did the weird power move that I haven't been able to do forever. And that's W-E-E-R-D weird power move, which is you wake up early in the morning. You putter around and you do some stuff, maybe play some video games, maybe chill out, check your email, do some stuff, have breakfast, have a cup of tea, and then go right back upstairs and go back into bed and sleep for another couple hours. It was awesome. And I can only do that because other people have my daughter.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's just with that. We have just been doing like as close to nothing as humanly possible. There might be moss growing on me right now, and I couldn't be happier.
You don't shower?
Oh, no. I'm freshly showered, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
I'm just joking about the fact of, like, sloths, where their fur starts turning green just because they live in the jungle and they don't move.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's about it. I mean, not really a whole lot going on here, but if you don't mind, we got there's a bunch of cool stuff in the news to talk about.
Well, if you must.
I must. Well, first up, we talked last week about Ken and Karen. As a matter of fact, they were the title of the show. Ken and Karen say, "Get off our lawn." And there's a couple of things. First up, I've heard that their names are not Ken and Karen. As a matter of fact, Sean Sarantino texted me as soon as the Patreon show went live and going, their names aren't Ken and Karen. That was like an Instagram name or some such nonsense and all that. I'm like, too late. Ken and Karen are too perfect.
Oh, that's too bad.
He said what their other name was, and I'm like, you know what? Nope, too late. It's already stuck.
Well, you know, I honestly thought that was their name because I couldn't find it mentioned anywhere else, and so I just thought that was them, and it was kind of perfect because sometimes coincidences do happen in this crazy world.
No, it's their name. It's right up there with Oddball and I were talking the other day, and we were mentioning the fact that, oh yeah, at our weddings, half the people at attending the weddings only referred to us as Weird or Oddball, respectively. Sometimes it's just too good.
Well, for the record, their names are Mark and Patricia.
I mean, it's almost as good, but I like Ken and Karen better. But yeah. Oh, and by the way, a friend of the show, Eric, was posting about the fact that I was saying that she was carrying a Walther PPK. And he was pointing out that it looks an awful lot like she's packing a Raven. And I ended up like digging through photos of the of their little standoff. And I did finally almost all the photos are from the right side of the pistol. And so I just couldn't quite tell. And then I saw a picture from the left hand side and I could not see the safety up on the slide that the Walther PPK has and went, you know what? That might be a Raven, which gets me scratching my head. How do you live in a frigging castle and yet like your go-to gun? I mean, first up, she's got a go-to gun. So she armed up too. Like Ken got his AR. He tossed at least one mag in the pocket of his chinos and he was out there barefoot, ready to rock and roll. And she went, cool, I'm going battle rattle too. What am I grabbing? I'm going to grab a $100 pot metal crappy gun.
All right. So for our listeners who don't know what a Raven is, it is made by Jimenez Arms, which used to be called something else, I think.
Jennings.
Jennings. And it's one of those guns that has a reputation for being absolute crap. I mean, a lot of people bag on a high point, and I will agree that a high point is a big old boat anchor, and the slide being made of, I don't know if it's really pot metal, but it's
Samek. Oh, it's totally pot metal.
Oh, okay. You know, and the slide does have a tendency to break, but one, at least it has the decency to break after, you know, many rounds as opposed to a few. And two, High Point has a lifetime replacement guarantee. You break it, you send it in, they'll send you back a new one. And three, High Point just seems to have a better reputation than Jimenez or Jennings or Brico or some of these other ones. It's like, I would let a friend buy a High Point. I would not let a friend buy any of those other guns because they have a terrible reputation of being dangerous. Mm-hmm. And hey David, if you have any horror stories about these guns that, you know, spontaneously disassemble themselves, or, well, I don't really want stories about people getting hurt, but just examples of why these are not good guns, that would be a great segment for Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. And so the point is, you've got this really rich couple because they're both lawyers. They live in this multi-million-dollar mansion. He looks like he, I don't think it's ever been determined, but they figured that based upon the design of the gun and the money they had, it very well could have been a pre-ban M16 machine gun. And then she's got this piece of crap pistol. What the heck? I don't know. People are a mystery to me.
Yeah, I don't get it. Because again, It's one of those things that a PPK makes perfect sense. I mean, PPKs mm-hmm. are really inexpensive as well. Like, they're, Walther is more than happy to try to get a PPK into your hands. And they're fine. It's one of those, it's just like the Beretta 92. It's one of those guns that I just don't like and I think is vastly overrated for what it is. But it's a really, it's a solid gun. They work. They're well made. They're well built. It's going to do all that you need. I think there's some better choices out there, but you know what? If you like it, and if you're a Bond fan and that makes you excited, you know what? Get yourself a Walther PPK. You could probably get one like new for like $300. I think they might be up to like $400 now, but they're not terribly expensive. And that seems like something that somebody would just get, and that would be something that they'd want to get, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But like, you had to explain to the world what a Raven is. Like, no one has to know explain what a Walther PPK is, because people
exactly
know it. But a Raven, like, that's one of those guns that it's the people that I know that have Ravens seriously. I mean, Oddball's got like Cobras and all sorts of other horrible garbage. And I've got a Jennings.
Of course he does. Of course he does. He has terrible taste in movies. He has terrible taste in guns. But I also have confidence that Oddball buys them basically to collect, to have, to laugh at. It's not like he would, you know, okay, he might take one to the range if he's feeling sporty, but he would not depend on it for a carry gun, whereas some people do.
Yes, I have a Jennings, which is the predecessor to this Raven, and I have a Beretta 21A, which is a little tiny 22 pocket pistol. It is what has taken the place of the Jennings when it comes to range trips. I used to shoot the Jennings from time to time. I haven't shot it since I bought this Beretta because the Beretta works and it's safe. And I have carried this Beretta when I'm dressed in my fine suit. The pockets are too small for any of my pocket guns. And so, you know what? The jacket is a little too fitted for a shoulder holster. So, you know what? I drop that little sucker in the pocket, and it works out very nice. And I totally am fine with that. It's not the best carry gun in the world because it's not a 45, but you know what? Nobody wants to get down range even when I'm slinging 22s. So to suddenly turn around and have like a Jennings as the gun that you grab, like, I got a whole bunch of guns in my safe that there's my top view. Like, there's the 1911 and the FAL right there up top. Those are the guns that I grab for. But it's one of those, like, I got a Mossberg 590. You know what? A trench shotgun. That's a decent go-to gun if there's an angry riot outside. Riot mm-hmm. gun. Cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At no point would you get to some of my garbage guns. Like, I've got a Radom P64, which is a Walther PPK made by the Polish when they were occupied by the Soviets. And it's awful. And it's hilarious. But it's not a gun that I would seriously grab in a time of need. Either way. But that's, I was talking about that. I wanted to make, another correction I wanted to make from last week is I mentioned that they were neighbors to the mayor. And in fact, the story gets even more WTF in the fact that no, they're not. The mayor does not live in that gated community. So the rioters broke into a gated community claiming to be wanting to protest for the mayor's resignation, but she didn't live there and she doesn't live near there. And there was no way to even get to the mayor's house from this gated community. It's not like it was on the way. They went out of their way to break down this gate entity. So I don't know if they were misinformed, but yes, sorry.
Oh, so I didn't hear that. Now, I had heard later on that the reason they had been walking through the community was because it was a shortcut to the mayor. And I mean, I didn't agree, but I could at least understand why they're going that way. But now to hear that you couldn't even get to the mayor's house by going that way, that looks even worse. What the heck?
Yeah. So who knows the story behind that? But those are two things that I said incorrectly on last week's show. That was my understanding at the time that we recorded. And again, if you're hearing this, this is if you're We're recording this on Monday. We release this for patrons on Friday, and then general release on the following Monday. So we're a week behind. It happens. But yeah, the other one was that they released a statement through their lawyer. They are lawyers, but of course, obviously, you don't want to defend yourself, even if you are a lawyer. And their lawyer released a statement. And one of the things that they stated was that they have nothing against the Black Lives Matter movement or anything like that. And that, again, they are personal injury lawyers, and they have actually at least one suit. I want to say there's more than one suit against the St. Louis Police Department for police brutality cases. And I believe they specified that these were people of color that they were representing. And so
I thought I mentioned that last week.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
And so essentially what I wanted to point out is that these guys, while they you may want to color them with your political views, they're certainly not fitting in with the narrative, which I'm going to say is not fitting in with the narrative is kind of the new narrative. And so I wanted to use that as a transition into this next news story, which is, let me read the headline here. Armed Black Lives Matter activists and right-wing group come together at Richmond Open Carry March in a united show of support for the Second Amendment. And this quote-unquote right-wing group, I don't necessarily agree with that label. Let's just say these guys are wearing lots of plate carriers and Hawaiian shirts. These are definitely the Boog Boys.
Yeah, in fact, that's how I heard it mentioned on Facebook, BLM and the Boogie Boys.
Mm-hmm. And so for those that know, the joke is that they're making a joke off of Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo. The statement is that the political climate is starting to get toxic. And the statement is, depending on your motivation, is saying that either the solution that they are looking for is a second American Revolution, or my feeling is, do you want a second American Revolution, or do you want to sit down and talk about this? And maybe we can settle this without gunfire. This is hilariously topical almost, is there's been a bunch of like news articles saying that the Boog Boys, the Big Igloo, people are white supremacists, which is, I mean, really hilarious as a general rule anyway, because if you look at Boogaloo groups, they tend to side a little bit on the white side, but they are absolutely takers of all if you're Second Amendment supporters and lovers of freedom. And so they've been saying, oh, Hawaiian shirts are signs of white supremacy, and these are bad people, and they're doing horrible things and all of that. And then they get together with BLM and get together and all unite to protect the Second Amendment and to save our individual liberties. And you know what? It's just, it warms the cockles of my heart.
Yeah. I mean, there's a picture that I'm looking at, and you can see you've got people dressed in all black with Black Lives Matter and the upraised fist. And then right next to them in the camo and the plate carrier and the Hawaiian shirts, you've obviously got, well, let's not mince words, you have white people. Mm-hmm. You have white people next to black people with Black Lives Matter, and they're okay with each other. And there are other pictures where you know, they're standing side by side, they got arms around each other. Mm-hmm. It's very obviously a, hey, I'm cool with you, you're cool with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really, but here's something that I thought was really cool, because in that same rally, there's a picture of the keynote guest speaker, Virginia Senator Amanda Chase, who shows up. Now, before anyone gets excited, no, she's not wearing Hawaiian print. But she is wearing an AR on a single point sling.
Ooh.
Oh, you didn't scroll down to see that?
Let's see. There she is. Yep.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, look at that.
Oh, that thing is set up. That's a nice setup, too. She knows what she's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it looks almost like it might be a 2-point sling, and she's just got it looped over her neck, single point style. Of which I would say I'm gonna give that bonus points because I am definitely a 2-point sling man myself.
Mm. Okay. Well, I mean, either way, it's hanging from her neck, and it's very obviously accessible in that manner.
And it is obviously set up that is her personal rifle, and that she knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's very good to see. I also like the a couple pictures above that. I think it's like the third from the bottom is a group of it's all BLM people. Specifically, I don't see anybody that's poking out. Though there is the guy with the Rugrats shirt and the Mossberg Shockwave, of which he gets bonus points from me right there. Like, you're my hero, dude. And he's got a Nike Just Do It mask on, bandana for his mask. Which, you know what, like all kinds of awesome. But there's a guy that has a red hat, and I saw the red hat with white letters, and I went, oh, really? Is that a Trump hat? That seems a little interesting. Let me see. And it says I can't breathe, which, let me tell you, I like that subverting of the message. So that really made me happy. And I just wanted to kind of dive into, this has been like the continuous thing throughout this whole COVID lockdown nonsense, really. Let's call it nonsense. Is that, I mean, the gun shops have been picked clean. I mean, I'm hearing all sorts of stories of shops. I haven't even bothered going to a gun shop. Like, I just don't even desire, because I just don't want to go in and just see the shelves being empty. And like, great, I came in to get some ammo. You don't have any. I came in here to look at some guns. You don't have any. Well, cool. That was a waste of time. But everybody's saying it. The Brady campaign's saying it. The people that work at gun shops are saying it. Everybody's pointing out the fact that a huge portion of these people are first-time gun buyers. They're seeing what's going on, and they're realizing that, oh, my general platform was call the police and let them handle it. Let the maid take care of it. Is really how that reads in my book. And instead, they're realizing, oh, I'm on my own. So they're going to the gun shops. And with these people, they are, I mean, it's also been happening as younger people have been buying firearms and more urban and suburban people have been buying firearms. And the Black community is going from a group that was generally not terribly armed to getting very prominently armed. I mean, the number of self-defense stories that I'm seeing with African-American people defending their homes lawfully and good has just gone up precipitously over the last like decade, but they're not necessarily changing their politics. And so talk about Ken and Karen, talking about the BLM and the Boog Boys and all this group all coming together, is we really have to learn to come together, because this is really, number one, the way we're going to win together. And it's also going to quell a lot of the bad feelings that are going on right now.
So you've basically done my job and introduced your topic for the Weird Audio Fisk, because that was one of the things that's in there. Where you've got the person that you're fisking is talking about people buying guns for coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you had me set up to introduce this, because you've already done it. But you know what? Just because it'll completely throw off your groove, I will introduce you anyway. Weird found a roundtable by the Brady campaign. You know what that means, right? That's right. It's not just one Fisk, but the first in a series of Fisks, because apparently he doesn't know how entropy works, and that he's just pissing his life away fisking people who will never listen to him and never change their minds.
So I found this very interesting roundtable meeting from the Brady campaign. It consisted of four people who are allies of the Brady campaign and admitted gun owners. And they spent over an hour self-flagellating. I really wanted to cover this for the Weird Audio Fisk, but we're not going to sit here for like 3 hours while I fisk it. Instead, I divided my clips up by speaker. So the plan is four speakers, four fisks, and I think this will all work out well. So I'll start with Kylie Ann Hunter, who is moderating the panel.
I'm Kyle Ann Hunter, Vice President of Programs for Brady, and a longtime gun owner and lifelong sports shooter.
No, she's a sports shooter. I find the Elmer Fudds are one of the largest group of people who say, I'm a gun owner. But also, she's a Marine veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan as an AH-1W Super Cobra pilot. I applaud and thank her for her service. But again, I'm perplexed, like with New Jersey Representative Mikey Sherrill, how a helicopter pilot who commanded ordnance that could be confused with the fist of an angry god, like in the case of Representative Sherrill, a goddamn nuclear depth charge, and Ms. Hunter, 20mm auto cannons and Hellfire missiles. But they seem to have an issue with Americans owning semi-automatic 5.56 rifles.
We're really here to dig in today with this fantastic panel to talk about why gun owners need to be vocal in gun violence prevention.
I agree. Gun owners should be very vocal about gun violence prevention, such as advocating the dissolution of gun-free zones that emboldens criminals and the barriers for entry that keep people who live in poor, high-crime areas from owning guns. But this is the Brady campaign, so gun violence prevention really means anti-gun policies that promote violence and invite more gun control.
But what we have seen develop over the past week really is that not only do gun owners need to be open about the role of responsibility and safe storage, we also need to be open about policing our own in terms of issues of white supremacy and addressing head on the fact that if we are silent in how gun culture has far too often been co-opted by white supremacists, we're also complicit in that regard.
Okay, maybe I'm out of the loop, but didn't the shooter at the Charleston Black Church try and recruit friends from the white supremacist website Stormfront so he could start a race war? According to the FBI, that's exactly what he did. And nobody wanted to join him, so he committed his crime alone. I mean, the closest I could find to white supremacists in pro-gun circles is the anti-gun corporate lobbies calling pro-gun groups white supremacists out of spite. The Virginia Lobby Day rally was deemed white supremacists, but it was Second Amendment advocates of all colors marching against Governor Ralph Northam, who is at best a sympathizer for the KKK and a darling of the gun control movement. Brady better go clean house before they go point their fingers.
Record numbers of background checks that are being performed, which leads us to have a very good conclusion that there is a very large number of gun sales that are going on. Anecdotally, we know that there are many of these people are first-time gun owners.
Even the anti-gunners have to admit that the COVID gun rush is mostly new gun owners. And while they don't say it, they imply a huge number of them are people who used to support gun control. And while the anti-gunners are trying to shame them back onto the plantation, we need to welcome them into the fold, even if we don't agree on everything.
And we know that, you know, Kayla mentioned this, and we've seen this in some of the anecdotal stories as well, that Black women are more and more purchasing guns as a way of protection. We also know women in general are purchasing guns as a way of protection. People who would not identify themselves as really sort of part of a gun owner group are purchasing guns. And with that comes risk.
Women in general. And people of color in general. And again, we welcome you. Hopefully you're starting to see the political factors that got those of us who've been in the fight for so long so passionate about fighting restrictions. And hopefully those of you who might have been supportive of Michael Bloomberg or Brady in the past are seeing the error of your ways.
You know, what we in the military refer to as negligent discharges are going to go way up when people don't actually know how to use these things.
I would love to say this was BS. And I might be wrong, but honestly, in a world where we teach abstinence-only education as far as guns and gun ownership in schools, when there is a sudden gun panic and training classes in most places are outright illegal, and they may not have any gun owners in their circle of friends, this is a risk. Still, at the time being, YouTube is loaded with safety videos, and there are lots of websites. So hopefully our new compatriots are looking for help on the internet.
Lack of knowledge about storage, which is one of the things. What are you going to do with this gun when you're not around it?
they seem to think that safe storage is universal, but really it's unique to the person. Who are they concerned about? If you live alone, keeping your doors locked is as good as any safe storage option. Do you have small kids? What about adult roommates? How much money do you have to spend? Do you own a home or are you just renting? These all need to be considered for safe storage. But there isn't any one simple solution.
And also lack of knowledge about how you might be perceived by others.
Now, this is the biggest load of crap. This is the best example of concern troll I've ever heard. Why might you be perceived differently as a gun owner? Perhaps because the corporate anti-gun lobby has been making gun owners out as extremists, racists, and killers for decades now. And now these new gun owners have walked into gun shops and walked out realizing they aren't any different as human beings than they were that morning. They're just better equipped for life now.
We know that most of these are first-time gun owners who are in a situation where they're getting a gun without a lot of the normal conversations and support and one-on-one person-to-person interaction to learn how to be safe around them that might be seen.
Again, this is an issue that has been caused by the anti-gun movement. They color gun owners as dangerous extremists who should be avoided, and they pride themselves in never handling guns. They qualify their gun ownership with hunting or sporting because owning a gun for self-defense should be considered bad behavior. And the pro-gun side for decades has been advising public schools to teach gun safety like they used to. My dad took his hunter safety course at his elementary school. Who's been preventing this? The corporate anti-gun lobby has.
The four of us saying we're responsible gun owners, we need to also be calling to task. And that is some of the undercurrent of privilege that exists in gun ownership in many ways and has been misused and co-opted by extremists.
Specifically, the extremists who have been working tirelessly for generations to make gun ownership something that only the wealthy and the politically connected can do. Mandatory training costs money and requires people to take time off work to attend. Restrictions on where gun shops and gun clubs can exist means people have to travel long distance, often outside the reaches of public transportation. Bloomberg-style universal background checks adds cost to the firearms and makes it difficult, if not illegal, for people to gift guns or buy guns privately for less money. Waiting periods demand more time be devoted to acquiring a firearm. Handgun rosters keep affordable handguns out of shops. Assault weapons bans limits the more affordable long guns from shops. Magazine bans make guns less effective for self-defense and inflate magazine prices. Mandatory permitting adds expense and time to buying guns. May issue permitting often restricts the poor from permits entirely. Was that what you meant? Because that's the reality of gun control laws.
Most recent cases of just seeing this really in our face is in Michigan, where we had groups of armed protesters show up and essentially bully and intimidate the legislature away from actually doing their job.
Except that the protests were against the governor's stay-at-home orders that she herself didn't follow. And then she extended them because of the protests. But when BLM and Antifa protesters burned private property, they got what they wanted. Clearly the peaceful protests were doing it wrong. Is that what you meant?
As a Marine who spent time, a lot of time fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, and this is exactly the behavior that in those countries, when we saw armed groups bullying elected legislatures, intimidate them, threatening them with force for doing their job to go out and elect the you know, to represent their people. We referred to this as terrorist activity. We referred to these places as almost failed states. You know, this was unacceptable behavior.
Remember that line she said about how new gun owners needed to think about how people might view them for owning guns? Yeah, you just compared Americans for exercising their rights to terrorists.
Seeing white people do this in this country using their you know, using really hiding as cowards under the Second Amendment is what these folks are doing.
White people? What racist garbage? The Second Amendment and freedom protests were attended by all races, just like the riots were conducted by all races. If I was to claim that the riots in this country were perpetrated by only black people, well, I would sound like the governor of Virginia. She's saying gun owners need to speak out against racism. Yet everybody on this panel held their tongue for this line of racist garbage. They take racism as seriously as they do gun violence.
Moving that responsibility upstream to the dealers that are profiting off of that, rather than going after individuals so that communities can heal. You know, these are important parts of the conversation.
This is just talking about community policing, and she's perpetuating the myth of bad apple dealers, which used to be a prominent Brady talking point, but they seem to have all but abandoned it. I covered this talking point back in ACP episodes 16 and 17, back in 2018. But yeah, bad apple gun dealers are a myth. And going after gun dealers is just a method of reducing the number of shops in an area, often poor areas, so as to make sure that the poor are further excluded from gun ownership.
Even the response to COVID. I mean, an organization that's essentially saying, like, buy guns because COVID is scary. I mean, that's what you're going to shoot a virus. Like, but it creates this cavalier attitude.
Remember that bit where she called gun owners terrorists? Now she's calling the people who bought guns during the lockdown idiots. The new gun owners should read the writing on the wall. They left the fold and are no longer wanted by the anti-gun groups, even if they once were counted as supporters. Even if their politics don't line up with ours, we need to welcome the new shooters in, because whether they planned it or not, they're now part of the fight for our rights. I'll take on another one of these self-hating gun owners next week. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
Okay, so I don't want to sound like a complete bitch. I mean, what you do is definitely good for the community, but I am astounded at the amount of energy you exert for people who will never appreciate it. I mean, we've already got, what's it called? Brandolini's asymmetric BS principle or something, where it's like the amount of effort needed to refute garbage is like 10 times the amount of effort needed to put it out. And they're just spewing. And I don't know how you do it.
Well, I enjoy it. I won't lie. I mean, just before you came on to start this show, I'm working on part two. I've got to say, I do it for multiple. Number one, I know that the anti-gunners don't listen. I mean, I remember back when the Armed with Reason podcast existed. If you went on Apple iTunes and clicked on the Armed with Reason podcast, you found that the people that listen to the Armed with Reason podcast also listen to, you might want to listen to, the Gun Blog Variety Cast, Downrange Radio with Michael Bain. I think We Like Shooting might have been in there, but it was a bunch of pro-gun podcasts were listed because anti-gunners weren't even listening to this show. So the people that were listening to it was, I mean, I think Gun Blog Variety Cast was the one that was really sending up the flare and letting people know that, hey, there's an anti-gun podcast. You might want to give it a listen. It's hilarious. So I'm not worried about the Brady campaign finding out that I'm fisking them, because they're not. They're not. I mean, they're not even listening to their own crap. But it is to. I do it for a couple of reasons. One is to inoculate people so that they hear these absolutely horrendous arguments, and instead of just going, "No, you don't, you poopy head," and just blowing an opportunity to change somebody's mind and to make friends instead of further this war, they actually will have some points on the, well, in fact, criminals don't get their guns from gun shops, so therefore universal background checks doesn't do anything for crime, but it does disenfranchise minorities and poor people. So yeah, there's that. Also, again, you pointed out the fact that I kind of led into you talking about how we need to get together and we need to all stand up for the Second Amendment together. This is really kind of, they're doing it the opposite way. It's one of those, listen to what they're doing and don't do that, is they are pushing people away. They're calling these armed protesters, both the BLM and the Boog Boys at this Virginia rally. And these guys are based out of Virginia. Certainly Kylie Ann is based out of Virginia. They're calling them terrorists. So all mm-hmm. those people, if you're in the show notes and you click through that wonderful article to look at those pictures that Aaron and I were describing, they're saying every one of those people in there is a terrorist. And they're also saying, if you bought a gun because the police are saying that they're not going to respond to as many calls, or because there's riots and political unrest and things like that. You're an idiot. You're a fool. You're being led by the nose, and that's not what you do. And we also don't do for the people that have supported gun control in the past, but now are owning guns. Don't go see, I told you so. But at the same time, don't be afraid to point out exactly why it was a mistake to do that and how much worse they made things with that. On the, yeah, it was a pain in the butt for you to get your gun, especially if you're in some of the states that have like waiting periods and extra background checks, or here in Massachusetts where they demand you have permits. You point out the fact that, yeah, this is a problem. This is not good. This is not helping anybody, but this is hurting people. And I have it in the general section, but there is a Cam and Company show where he's actually interviewing a woman who owns a gun shop in Washington, and she's again pointing out the fact that these are almost all new gun owners that are coming in through her shop, and she talks about like people are lined up at like 8 o'clock in the morning for the shop to open up at 11. And it's opening it up at 11 because their inventory gets so depleted during the day that they need time to in the morning to restock the whole store. It's just crazy what's going on. But yeah, we got to welcome these people into the fold. And it really looks like the Brady campaign's not doing that. And the anti-gun groups aren't. But again, she points out when people are like, oh yeah, you've got a waiting period for this gun. Well, why do I have a waiting period? Well, did you vote?
Because you voted for it
when it was going through? Yeah, I did. Well, that's why you've got a waiting period. Maybe we shouldn't do that in the future. Now, Xander, who has become a regular contributor to ACP, brings us his independent thoughts on physical fitness.
Welcome to Xander's Independent Thoughts, with yours truly, Xander Opal. In this installment, I will take a break from the discussion on firearms and talk about the most basic of preparations, your physical abilities. When I joined Aaron, Adrian, Oddball, and David at Confinement, there was an excellent panel on Saturday morning about basic core exercises. One of the things that the host brought up was how certain motions and physical ability is needed to get by independently day to day. These things are so simple, healthy people don't think about them. Anyone who is physically impaired, even temporarily due to injury, has discovered how important these motions are. Consider the everyday task of bringing home groceries. You get the bags from your vehicle, set them down to unlock the front door, then crouch a little to pick them up again. There might be as much as 20 pounds in one bag, or an 8-pound gallon of milk or water. That's a deadlift. Consider the times you have to get up off the floor, either picking small things up, or you trip while trying to avoid the cat or dog, or discover a curb on the sidewalk the hard way, or you reach overhead to put something in or take something out of a cupboard or the freezer. That's a press. Third, consider the rest of the motion of standing up, usually from a seated position. Sometimes taking an item or handful along with you if you are in the above example, cleaning or picking up. That's a squat. Each of these actions require not just the main muscles, but also stabilization and balance to keep from falling over or dropping things. It is a full body action to do so, and necessary to keep going day to day. Now, after the panel, the host offered to put volunteers through a 6-minute light exercise. I was one of four who joined in. A fairly simple routine. 30 seconds of deadlifts with a 20-pound weight, starting with the weight on a chair. 30 seconds of push-ups or wall presses. I did push-ups from my knees. 30 seconds of squats. I did mine without any additional weight. 30 seconds of rest, then repeat. I discovered a fourth key ability, stamina. I should have tapped out about halfway through, and didn't, forcing myself on the last set of repetitions. After which, my vision started to sparkle. It was tunneling by the time I was guided inside to cool air, a chair, and water. I was told that I had gotten extremely pale as well. Fortunately, I recovered with the timely help of the people supervising the exercises. I did not realize how close to the edge of basic physical capability I am as I record this. Very little strength, very little stamina. Something as simple as changing the tire on a car or a minor injury to one of my legs could render me crippled or worse. It doesn't matter how many boxes of food or bullets you have if you can't manage simple everyday tasks. There's also a difference between activity, moving around, and exercise, increased heart rate and respiration. I keep active at work, but that doesn't render me anywhere near fit. My health has, in fact, been subtly degrading without actual, real exercise. To that end, I decided to start somewhere, walking briskly for half a mile twice a day. By brisk, I mean I covered the distance in 12 to 14 minutes while wearing a backpack with probably 20 pounds of stuff, laptop, my lunch, etc. I also carry a good-sized bottle of water, which I might upgrade to a gallon jug in the midst of summer. I also got a journal to write down my daily times and goals. Exercise for the sake of exercise is hard. Effort to reach a defined goal is better. In a fit of my usual humor, I chose a diary embossed with Game Over on the cover to remind me of why. Have fun, be safe, and I hope I gave you something to think about. Timing!
Yeah, so when he started doing this, I asked Xander, okay, well, you were a super fan, and you know what happens? What do we call you? Because now you're a contributor. And he made a joke, because he always makes a joke, and he says, well, I guess now I'm a self-actuating fan.
Oh, he's so awesome. And this is a great, another great segment. Like, he's bringing the quality. I got to say, when he was talking about like getting an injury or something like that to that really changes stuff around, I was just the first thought of the I was in a swim team when I was in the high school and middle school, and my high school swim team specifically, they had you would half the team would swim in the pool and the other half would do what was called dry land work. And that would be, we would be up on the pool deck and doing essentially body weight workouts and resistance band stuff. And one of the exercises they had, we called them Camachos. And this was before Idiocracy. And I have no idea where the heck he got that term, because I've never found it ever again, ever since. And if you search Camacho, all you see is Terry Crews. With the Camachos, it was, I actually got a video. I found it. They call it, what do they call it? They call it partner leg throwdown exercise. At least is the video that I found for it. Is you sit down with your head between your partner's legs and your partner is in the standing position. And,
ooh la la.
And you hold onto their ankles and then you kick your feet up. And essentially, we kind of had it set up as kind of an antagonistic relationship where you're trying to kick the other person in the chest and they're trying to push your feet as far away as you can. And so they're pushing your feet and you're stopping. You have to stop your legs and bring them back up to the other person only for them to push them back again. And so because of the leverage, they're pushing your ankles. So there's a lot of leverage and all that. So there's a huge amount of torque and your abs get destroyed. And after like a few minutes of this and plus the other exercises we were doing, I learned how much you use your abs on a daily basis. You kind of don't think about it. You think, oh, you use it for sit-ups. So sitting up, but like just swimming in the pool, keeping my body straight as I'm swimming, my abs were on fire. And you just get all these sort of things. Like you're cut, you know, if I'm cutting vegetables and then suddenly I cut a finger and suddenly you realize, oh yeah, no, I use that finger for everything. And so, yeah, it was a interesting thing that came to mind on how an injury can teach you how much you use a certain muscle or muscle group on a day-to-day basis. And also the great line about prepping. I'm trying to remember, there's a couple of people, I think it was Grant Cunningham, definitely said that like on a handgun radio once, and pointing out the fact that, hey, you can take all sorts of high speed, low drag, you know, courses and be an expert shooter, all that. But if you climb up a flight of stairs and you're out of breath, you might want to look at that first, because if things really get hairy, that's going to be a major problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, you've got your guns, but how do you keep them safe and secure? After all, you can't watch them 24/7. David is here to give us some pointers on safe firearm storage.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. Last week, I was listening to a recent episode of Handgun Radio, during which Ryan and that other guy brought up the topic of secure storage. Since this is a very important, even essential part of responsible firearm ownership, I thought it deserved its own segment here. I spoke about securing firearms in a previous segment, though in a fairly general way. This time, I'm going to discuss the topic in additional depth, with more of a focus on non-portable methods, specifically gun safes and security cabinets. As the saying goes, locks only keep out honest people. However, there seem to be an increasing number of dishonest people out in the world. For that reason alone, it behooves us to secure our firearms. The safety of children and other people is an even better reason. There are many different options when it comes to securing firearms from unauthorized use. At the basic level is the trigger or action lock. Since 2005, federal law required some sort of locking device be included with every new firearm sold. Most of these are fairly flimsy cable locks, but they'll do in a pinch. A better option is a locking container, whether a lockbox type, a gun safe, or a security cabinet. These come in a bewildering variety of sizes and styles. I'll go over some of the main points of security cabinets and safes here. First, we have what are commonly referred to as security cabinets. This is a basic metal box with a key-actuated bar lock on the inside of the door. The walls are not made of very thick steel, nor is the lock very robust. Security cabinets generally have little to no fire protection and won't keep out a determined thief. However, they are inexpensive, easy to transport, and, if bolted in the back of a closet, are much more secure. They also come in various sizes, from small ones that will store a couple of pistols to larger ones that will hold over a dozen long guns. For an example of security cabinets, take a look at the StackOn website. What are commonly marketed as safes are really grown-up security cabinets. They tend to be larger, heavier, have thicker walls, significantly better fire protection, vault-style locking bolts, and more robust locks. They also tend to be considerably more expensive. Did I mention heavier? A quality gun safe will weigh in at over 500 pounds, often considerably over. Consider the strength of the floor and plan on having it delivered by professionals. One of the more important things to keep in mind when choosing a security cabinet or safe is capacity. This needs to be considered in two ways. First, what is the manufacturer's listed capacity? If the safe will be used to store any ARs, scoped rifles, or both, cut that number by at least 20%. These rifles take up an awkward amount of space and may prevent loading the safe to its listed potential. Second is the realistic expectation for storage needs. A good general calculation is to take the number of firearms currently owned, add the number of firearms you reasonably expect to purchase over the next year, then double that total. Seriously, get the biggest safe you can afford in both dollars and capacity. If all goes well, it will eventually be too small. Best to put that day off as long as possible. When I purchased my first safe, the size was based on the largest model that would fit through the door of the room in which I wanted it placed. That was my limiting factor. In addition was the strength of the floor I was going to bolt it to. Yes, a safe should be bolted to the floor. That door is pretty heavy, and the last thing any of us need is to have the safe tip towards us because it wasn't secured properly. Another option is purchasing a safe door and having it mounted on a secure room. This is usually the most expensive option, but it allows the owner to configure a much larger space. The next consideration is what type of lock does the safe have. The basic security cabinets almost always have key locks, although that is starting to change. Safes usually come with either a traditional combination dial or an electronic keypad. They may also have a fob or biometric option in addition to the two main lock types. These all have their pros and cons. Combination dials tend to be slower to operate, but a good brand, such as Sargent and Greenleaf, will be much more reliable. Keypads are faster and generally easier to configure, but are battery dependent. Fobs and biometric options have similar pros and cons as keypads, with the additional con of being part of a still maturing technology. Do the research before purchasing, not after. In addition to the basic safe, there are a variety of accessories available to enhance their utility. I'm sure most of our listeners have heard the old saying that guns only have two enemies, rust and politicians. Weird's fists can help with the latter. A good dehumidifier can help with the former. These come in two main types, electronic and chemical. The electronic type are typified by the industry standard goldenrod. These are basically a metal rod that, when plugged into an outlet, generate a small amount of heat. In the enclosed space of a safe, that's enough to drive out moisture. All that's needed is a nearby outlet. If the location of the safe does not include access to electricity, there are also chemical dehumidifiers. These generally contain water glass or a similar chemical and will absorb moisture from a rated area, say 100 square feet, for a specific time, such as 4 to 6 weeks. They include an indicator of some type to show when they've absorbed all they can and need to be recharged. This recharging usually involves either plugging them in or putting them in a warm oven for a few hours. Then they can go back in the safe. Additional accessories include lights, both corded and battery-operated, door organizers, and pistol racks and hangers. All of these serve to help customize the interior of the safe for more efficient storage. A safe owner also needs to build good habits when it comes to the safe. For example, before leaving the house, my wife or I check to make sure the safe is locked. If one of us forgets to do this, we'll turn around and drive back to the house to make sure. I tend to keep the safe unlocked when I'm home. People who have children or regular visitors may not want to do this. We also have cats. One of our previous cats liked to explore the safe any time it was opened. Another habit I developed was making sure the safe was unoccupied before I closed the door. Finally, there's maintenance. Most security cabinets and safes don't require much. Check the owner's manual. If there are any battery-dependent elements on the safe, whether locks, dehumidifiers, or lights, make sure to change them regularly. At the biannual time change is a good guide. If you've got a chemical dehumidifier, set up a schedule for recharging. There are a wide variety of safe styles, sizes, features, and accessories. Choosing which combination of these is nearly as personal as selecting a carry gun. Hopefully, the information I provided here will help our listeners find the right tree in this forest. One final thought, an inexpensive security cabinet that can be purchased now may be a better choice than the perfect safe in a few years.
Weirdington Elizabeth Beard, you get down here and put the links in the show notes right now, or I will tan your hide.
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Will make sure I get them. To find our Facebook page, just type "ass" in the search bar. You'll find us. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
So, 2 points. First of all, I have one of those stack-on security cabinets, and I got mine at a ridiculously low rate. I don't know how I managed it. Maybe there was a sale or something, but I bought it 3 years ago. May of 2017, and I got it for a little over $90. These days, it retails for like $200-something. Mm-hmm. So it was an absolute steal. This is not so much to rub it in, but it was like, okay, this works for me, but you're going to have to work to try and get something at that price. You probably will have to pay a little bit more. I like it. I don't love it. It's okay. It does what I want it to do. I live in a house that is almost continuously occupied. It's very, very rare for there to be no humans here. And so the cabinet is basically for if I have to evacuate or for when I go away for a weekend. And it does its job. It is obviously not a safe. But one thing I do want to say is that it's listed as holding 8 guns, and well, maybe. Here's the thing, and it's the main reason I brought this up. It will hold 8 guns if none of them have optics, and you are just lying the flat of the receiver against the sides, then you could put 8 guns in there. If you have guns with optics, so I can't even fit my Mosin in there because it's too long. I have a 16-inch AR-15. I think it's carbine length. It's not an SBR, so I'm pretty sure 16 or 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have an SKS, and I have my Gammo 22 air gun. And between those three, I would be really hard-pressed to fit another one in there. So just be warned, if you've got optics, I think you'll get about half of the listed storage.
Yeah, that's what David said was, yeah, just if guns have optics, yeah, just divide it in half.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also there's also just the joy of you can take a stack on Stafe and stack them full. I remember at one point I was hanging out with Jay Grazio of Shooting Illustrated back when he still lived in Massachusetts, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I got one of those, or I got a cool gun to show you." I can't remember how it started off, but then he went and opened up the safe, and then just started, like, I think he actually had like towels in the safe where, like, he would put a bunch of guns down and then lay a towel on top of them and stack more guns on top so they wouldn't scratch each other. And so literally I think he took out like 8 guns before he got to the one that he wanted to show me. Oh, there's gun collectors and then there's gun accumulators. And Jay and I are the latter.
Well, okay then.
But yeah, they talked about in the Brady campaign round table. I mean, this fits. We didn't plan this. It fits wonderfully. They're talking about safe storage, and it's going to come up in the other ones as well from this round table. They all mentioned a little bit of this, but yeah, they kind of talk about safes as if it's like a one size fits all, but boy, there's a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, he talks about if you're going to buy like a full size safe, you know, there it might be 1,000 pounds before you put guns in it, and you might need to worry about what the floor is. If you're on a second floor walk-up apartment, I mean, number one, if either you end up having to leave that for whatever reason or move to another apartment or all that, like, you might need to hire people to move this damn thing to something else. So maybe a super effective secure safe, they're awesome, but it might not be the right thing to you, and it might not, the floor might not take it. It might end up crashing into the basement, and that would do nobody any good.
So I have a friend who moved from Florida to Tennessee, and he had at least one gun safe, maybe two. And I don't mean a stack on. I mean, he had the proper gun safe, you know, several feet across, had the tourney wheel, what you think of when you think gun safe. And he said it was more cost effective to sell the safe and buy a new one in his state of residence, mm-hmm, than to move it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right up there with moving a piano, which, by the way, which also might tie into gun safes. I do know that a friend of ours is a pianist, and yeah, he has a grand piano, and he lived in an apartment. And so literally he had a crane bring up the piano. I don't know if they took the legs off or what the story was, but literally a crane moved his piano into his apartment. And then he's living in a house now. When he bought his house, another crane came and took the piano back out.
Wow.
It's things to consider. So yeah, I mean, there is a time when, again, you talk about, I mean, there's no little children running around your place, Aaron. So even if the guns aren't locked up, everybody in your family knows how to shoot. It's not necessarily horrible to have a loaded gun in a nightstand in that instance. In my instance, I would not keep a loaded gun in my nightstand because I have a small child, and she's been trained to not touch a gun and tell daddy if she sees one. And she has done this, and we have tested her on other occasions. And even sometimes there's been a squirt gun sitting out. Daddy, there's a gun. Good girl. Thanks for telling us. But it's a squirt gun. Or daddy, there's a gun. Oh, that's an airsoft replica. So, she's been trained, and you don't want to ever trust things. Cause as David talks about going back, cause the safe isn't locked up. Yeah, you might forget and to latch it up. You might have it open. You're doing a bunch of stuff around there, and then the phone rings or something happens, and you get distracted. And so you never 100% rely on a storage option as your primary means of safety. But at the same time, it all depends on your individual lifestyle. That's the bottom line. And people like Brady Campaign, they want to mandate safes. They want to say you need to spend $1,000 on a safe. So if you are poor, or if you're like Karen and you have a $100 Raven, that you need to get $1,000 safe to stick it in.
So weird. What did you think of my cameo?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you guys are like scheming against me now. It was just like when it was his Stephen Hawking. It was jarring on the I'm listening to David. Oh my goodness, Aaron again.
So that was my stern mother voice.
Yes, it was.
Did it work?
It did work. The links are in the show notes.
Oh, good.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
You can find me at all the regular places, Lurking Rhythmically, Blue Collar Prepping, Pink Pistols, and Operation Blazing Sword. And one thing that I have done this week is I created a page on Facebook called Pink Pistols Announcements. So for people who don't want the drama of the Pink Pistols groups, but still want to stay informed of certain announcements involving chapters like When I Go Speaking, things like that, or a list of the various chapters that have Facebook pages, I've created that, and so you can follow that. I haven't really promoted it because not everyone's interested, but if you just want to keep track of that without having to deal with all the drama of a Facebook group, you can go there. And if you just search for at Pink Pistols Announcements, you should find it.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He is a naughty little boy, and I am just about at the end of my patience. Our tempers are assorted, and so's our podcast. Good night.
Good night, everybody. I'm going to go sit in the corner. Ha 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 ha!